First this hour, it's all over at the state capitol. Lawmakers adjourned their 2017 session yesterday evening while it was still light outside, a number of members made sure to mention. This morning, we'll get some perspectives on the session and the new laws that'll take effect in 90 days. We start with Representative Paul Boyer, Republican from Phoenix. And Representative Boyer, for you, I'm curious, what is the biggest or most important thing that came out of this year's session?
I'd say the university bonding component. I mean, that is significant. It's far-reaching. It's going to impact Arizona for a generation, if not more.
What do you think the ultimate impact of that will be for the universities and, I guess by extension, for the state?
Well, in the immediate jobs, of course, I mean, you've got a ton of construction jobs, but the long-term impact will be those people, the researchers, the students who are going to be in these facilities, who are going to be conducting research, winning grants, and coming up with cures for what have you, whatever is out there.
You are a teacher. You are chair of the House Education Committee. In fact, you were here earlier in the session talking about education and education funding. I'm wondering, now that the session is over, are you satisfied with what you and your colleagues did as far as education and teacher salaries and all the various issues that you're hoping to deal with as far as education?
With one caveat, yes. I wish we had talked about Prop 301 and the extension of it. That's the elephant in the room that nobody talked about.
The sales tax extension.
That's right. But other than that, I mean, I'm actually quite pleased with what we did. We gave teachers a $1,000 raise, which was, I mean, that's huge across the board. I think that we saw members, and I talked to a ton of members, who are very interested in getting money to teachers. And I've never quite seen that emphasis that I saw this year.
Do you think the amount that ended up in the budget, because this was certainly a point of contention leading up to budget discussions and during budget discussions, do you think that is enough to sort of stem the tide of teachers leaving the state and will be enough to bring them here and keep them here once they come?
Yeah, so I think if we continue what we're doing as far as if we can highlight the profession, if we can esteem the profession and talk about how much we value the profession, let teachers teach and not micromanage and reform Title 15, which is our education code, I think that coupled with raises, I think that will help.
You mentioned Prop 301, and I know that you are a proponent of expanding that and potentially increasing it as well. Did you have conversations with your colleagues about bringing that up and maybe even getting it on the ballot, referring it this year at least?
Unfortunately, we did not. And I was so busy with getting some firefighter bills through and a few other issues that honestly, I just didn't have time. But I would like to bring that up moving forward, of course.
Is that something that you hope maybe next year could be referred to the 2018 ballot?
Absolutely, because it, as you know, it expires here in a few years. And so we really should be talking about it right now.
You mentioned that you were working on some firefighter bills. I would assume those were sort of important going home ideas for you and things that you had wanted to do during the session. Anything else that was particularly important to you going into the session that you feel that you were able to get accomplished?
So I'm a happy camper right now. I mean, with the university bonding and also with the firefighter bills, those both passed, and this is a very good year from my perspective.
Anything other than Prop 301 that you wished you had time to get done?
Yeah, I wish the school recess bill that died at the very last minute in the Senate. That's the one that said that 2 25-minute recess periods for K-5, kindergarten through fifth grade, unfortunately, that died at the last minute and didn't reemerge.
I'm curious about the overall tone of the session this year. There's been some talk that maybe it was a little more genial than it had been in the past. I'm wondering from your perspective if that is in fact the case.
Not from my perspective. It was more frustrating than anything. I mean,
really?
I had my colleagues across the aisle, and it seemed like they were trying to make a procedural motion on not everything, but on issues that just didn't need to have a roll call vote. Just the formal motions that we make for, usually we reserve them for very important things or things that we're unsure of, but it almost seemed like it was intentional to slow down the process, and that was frustrating.
We had talked at the beginning of the session about the new procedure that Speaker Mesnard put into place as far as having subcommittees in the Appropriations Committee, really wanting this to be sort of a bottom-up approach as opposed to three people in a room negotiating a budget. Now that the budget has been approved and the session is over, do you think that that made a difference, that process? Was there a noticeable difference?
It did. Oh, my gosh. From a rank-and-file perspective, that was so heartening to see a true bottom-up budget where rank-and-file members like myself who don't sit on appropriations, who aren't subcommittee members, that we actually had input into the budget. And I get that some folks felt that the budget was taking too long and it was hard, and that's right, but I think it's intentionally supposed to be that way. And I loved seeing the input from all the members, whereas in the Senate, you didn't have quite as much input as we did over in the House.
All right, State Representative Paul Boyer. Representative Boyer, thanks for your time.
Cool, thank you.
And now for another perspective on the just-completed session, we turn to Rebecca Rios, Arizona House Minority Leader. Rebecca, good morning. Governor Ducey said this was a positive session for education in Arizona. How would you characterize that? Is that accurate in any way?
You know, I don't believe so. And I think the sentiment is shared not only by a number of my colleagues, but many Arizonans, particularly those that are in the education community, particularly teachers. If you recall, the governor opened up his State of the State address with quite literally about a dozen promises with regard to public education, including full-day kindergarten, signing bonuses for teachers. The list went on and on and on. When we actually saw the final result in this budget, it was a complete failure. What you saw was a 1% increase for teachers that is not even in the salary baseline. So it is essentially a bonus to teachers that amounts to $9 a week. There's also no language in the budget that guarantees that this will be done annually. So essentially, when they say they've given a $1,000 increase to teachers, it's a 1% for 2 years, amounts to $470 a year or $9 a week, and no guarantee that it will continue. The only other provision that went in with regard to the schools is quite literally a funding mechanism that literally pits one school against another for a limited amount of funds. He calls it results-based funding. And when you break out where that $37 million is going to go, the vast majority of it, $27 million, goes to higher-end schools that are in more affluent areas. So essentially, you end up with lower-producing schools receiving even less revenue. So in terms of public education, it has been an abysmal failure. I think you couple that with the fact that we are now under a second lawsuit because we didn't follow the initial lawsuit filed 25 years ago that said we needed to fund buildings in our K-12 system. We have school buildings that are literally falling apart, and so now you have this legislature under yet another lawsuit for failing to fund schools.
Did the Democratic proposal to have a 4% teacher raise ever get any momentum?
It got absolutely no momentum. We worked very hard to get the message to the governor. He never even entertained it, let alone countered it. It was primarily show so that the governor could then buy off Republican votes very cheaply. And in essence, what he ended up doing was giving Republicans $2 million more for a Koch brother freedom school at the universities, essentially a propaganda school. So by giving the impression that he was engaging with Democrats, he was able to, I think, frighten Republicans and buy off Republicans with pet projects. And in the end, the loser was public education.
Rebecca, House Democratic leadership issued a statement last night saying that Democrats will, quote, always choose people over politics. In the context of this session, maybe beyond education, what does that mean?
I think what it means is when you look at who are the big winners this session with regard to legislation, it was big businesses. The final bill that went through the Senate was yet another tax credit for big businesses. Arizona last year alone lost $14 billion, billion with a B, in revenue because of the perpetual giving away via tax credits, tax exemptions, tax cuts. And so you have Arizona that passed a $9.8 billion budget, the same amount that we had in our budget a decade ago, but yet we have 500,000 more people. We have passed numerous tax credits with this promise that it was going to be an economic development tool. It was going to generate all this revenue. And yet here we are a decade later, same amount of money in our budget, giving away $14 billion, but it provides a very convenient excuse for the governor and the Republicans to say, sorry, we don't have any money to give to public education. Gosh, we wish we could provide money for the developmentally disabled community, but we just don't have the money. We don't have the money because they're literally giving it away as quickly as it's coming in.
All right. Rebecca Rios is Arizona House Minority Leader. Rebecca, thank you.
Thank you so much.
One of the last bills approved this session restores a 2-year lifetime cap on cash assistance for needy families. The program is called TANF, which stands for Temporary Assistance to Needy Families. Lawmakers had cut it to 1 year last year. But that extra year comes with some stipulations. Sam Richard joins us now to talk about this. He's the executive director of the Protecting Arizona's Family Coalition. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning. Great to be here.
So what do you make of this? Is this a good deal, an extra year in exchange for some strings?
I think it definitely reflects a deal, that's to be sure. And I think maybe one thing I'll correct at the top, you said it restores it to 2 months or to 2 years. It extends it to 2 years. There are some additional strings and some additional hoops that these individuals have to go through to meet the requirements to get that additional 12 months. And, you know, 8 out of 10 individuals on the TANF assistance program are children. And a majority of those that aren't children are the single mothers that care for those children. So, you know, these are important things to keep in mind when we're talking about the context of this.
Is there a danger that the parents could run afoul of some of these new stipulations, causing their kids to lose assistance that they need?
That is a great question. And in fact, in some other states, when the parent of a TANF case gets a sanction or gets something that, you know, forces them to get off the program, the children are not penalized. Arizona doesn't have those same protections here. So while, you know, we were definitely pleased to see something happen rather than nothing, I think that there's quite a few things that need to happen to help correct the issues that the TANF program has.
Sam, when the TANF limit was put to a year, making Arizona the strictest in the country, what were you told about that? Why did the governor think at that time that was appropriate?
Yeah, the rhetoric around that decision was that there was tough choices to be made. And I call it rhetoric because I truly believe that really was the full reason of that. It was only rhetoric. There was really no reason why from a financial perspective, because we actually get about $225 million from the federal government to operate the TANF program. Mm-hmm. But we only spend $27 million of that on what we're talking about here today, the TANF cash assistance program. The rest of that we offset and play a little bit of a shell game with the general fund so that some of those tax credits that your previous guests were talking about go through.
What will you be telling the people with whom you work? What will your members be telling the people with whom they work about how to basically stay on the straight and narrow and make sure that they're able to get the full 2 years of assistance?
So we were grateful to see a statement released by the governor upon passage of the bill saying that he's going to direct his cabinet to work with the providers and the stakeholder community to make sure that we hold these third-party vendors accountable, because that's really where a lot of the sanctions come from through this jobs program. And it's a great program, and we all want to make sure that people find dignity in work regain a path towards independence. But there's a lot of work to be done to make sure that those third-party vendors are held accountable.
One other positive that some people are citing, Sam, is the elimination of the fingerprinting and imaging requirement for SNAP and TANF folks. It seemed as though most people were on one side of that, yet it seemed to be a struggle at the end. But how significant is that?
It's hugely significant. I mean, this cost the state upwards of $1 million a year, and by some reports that we caught 6 people over the last 6 years. So this wasn't ferreting out waste, fraud, and abuse, which, again, is some of the rhetoric that you see around this idea. There is, a very well-resourced office inside the Department of Economic Security that goes after individuals who perpetrate fraud against the state. So this program was not successful in pursuing that goal.
Sam, before we let you go, I'm curious if you think this is sort of the last word on this for a while. I mean, do you anticipate trying to get that 2 years increase maybe? Or are you worried about maybe going back to 1 year at some point?
Yeah, so I think it's important to know that over 36 states across the country offer TANF benefits at the federal maximum of 60 months. So we're well below that. So I think there'll always be a piece of the conversation that works to extend that. But I think in the immediate nature, we're going to be working with the governor and his staff to make sure that on the rules side of this, we can fix some of the immediate problems and move forward from there.
Sam Richard is executive director of PAFCO, Protecting Arizona's Family Coalition. Sam, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.